Okay, so starting this month's board meeting with our favourite topic, insurance and education session. I'm handing over to you, Laura.
Yes, please. Thank you. Okay, so insurance contracts. On Thursday this week, the board has a two-hour session to discuss six papers that provide analysis on some of the concerns and implementation challenges that have been raised by stakeholders about the requirements in IFRS 17. Since the standard was issued. Today we have a 30-minute education session, and that's to cover one of those six topics, which is Agenda Paper 2E on the future cash flows that are included in the measurement of reinsurance contracts held. Why are we having this session? As you'll see in the analysis in the paper, the staff think that some of the stakeholder concerns are based on some possible misunderstandings about how the IFRS 17 model works when it's applied to reinsurance contracts that an insurer holds. So ahead of your discussion of those stakeholder concerns that will be happening on Thursday, the plan for today is to use a simple example, which we published earlier in the year as educational materials, and that's also attached in this agenda paper, to walk through how the model works and to use that to show the board exactly where these possible misunderstandings are. We don't plan to go through every single slide one by one, you'll be happy to hear, but instead we'll go over the key facts and then we'll zone in on the key slides on particular points. I think it's probably going to take around 15 minutes, and then the rest of the time is free for any comments or questions that you might have ahead of the discussion that's going to happen on Thursday. So I'll start off by providing a brief overview of the relevant IFRS 17 requirements, what it is that the stakeholders' concerns are with those requirements, and then we'll go through the example. So firstly, the requirements. In IFRS 17, we have contract boundary requirements, and those identify which cash flows are included in the measurement of insurance contracts. The requirements of contract boundary don't focus on the stated legal term of a contract, but instead they look at the substantive rights and obligations that the insurer has by being the issuer or the holder of that contract. The same contract boundary requirements apply to both insurance contracts that the insurer issues and also to the reinsurance contracts that an insurer purchases, or reinsurance contracts held, as we call them. There have been a number of discussions on contract boundary at the Transition Resource Group meetings that have happened this year, all three of them, I think. And those discussions have been based around what the requirements mean for particular facts and circumstances, different fact patterns. And some of those have included fact patterns of reinsurance contracts held and what it means for those. So applying the contract boundary requirements, the future cash flows included in the measurement of a reinsurance contract that an insurer holds includes all of the cash flows that arise from an insurer's substantive rights and obligations as the holder of that reinsurance contract. In some circumstances, the insurer might have substantive rights or obligations that relate to the reinsurance of future contracts that the insurer hasn't issued yet. For example, the insurer might have a right to receive reinsurance for those future contracts at a predetermined price. In those circumstances, the cash flows included in the measurement of the reinsurance contract will include future cash flows that relate to those future underlying insurance contracts that the insurer hasn't issued yet. And hence, the CSM of that reinsurance contract will reflect the total net cost of purchasing that reinsurance. Okay. So stakeholder concerns with these requirements. So stakeholders have expressed concerns about applying the contract boundary requirements to reinsurance contracts held, mainly for two different reasons. The first reason is that they think the requirements are operationally complex because of the difficulties that there are in measuring the uncertain future cash flows. We're not planning to discuss those concerns today, but they are in the paper, which will be discussed on Thursday. The second reason is the one that we're planning to discuss today, and those concerns are that some stakeholders think that applying the requirements will result in a grossed-up reinsurance contract asset sitting on the balance sheet because you're including more cash flows in the reinsurance asset. And they also think that this might lead to a pattern of CSM being recognised that's inconsistent to how the CSM is recognised for the underlying contracts that it issues. Okay, so hopefully that was enough overview, and then we'll go straight into the example, I think. So if you could flick through the appendix in the paper to slide 4, which is the assumptions. So just a couple of assumptions that keep this example fairly simple. We've assumed in our example that the risk adjustment is zero, and we've also assumed that the discount rate is 0%. As well as that, we take it that services are provided evenly over each contract, and we also take it that everything occurs as we expected it to. So flicking on to slide 11, we have our fact pattern. In this example, we have an insurer, and they issue 3 identical insurance contracts over a 1-year period. Contract A, contract B, and contract C that you can see in the illustration. Each of the contracts that they issue has a coverage period of 1 year. And so as when you look at all 3 as a group, the overall coverage period for the 3 contracts together is 2 years. For each of contract A, B, and C, the insurer is expecting to receive 300 of premiums, which it will receive immediately on day 1, just after it's recognized the contract. And it's expecting to pay out claims of 200 over the coverage period for that contract. So this means that for each of the 3 contracts that it's issuing, it's expecting to make a profit of 100, being the 300 minus the 200. At the initial recognition of each of those insurance contracts that it's issuing, we have a sum of premiums of 300, claims of 200, and CSM of 100. So overall, it comes to nil. Now moving on to the reinsurance contract. The insurer purchases reinsurance to cover all 3 of these contracts that it's expecting to issue in the year on 1st of January. And the reinsurer agrees to take on 100% of the premiums for all those contracts in return for paying back 100% of the claims. This means that for the reinsurance contract, the insurer expects to incur a net cost of 300, which is equal to the profit it expects to make on the 3 underlying insurance contracts. So we've just gone for a simple 100% example here. Also in this example, the cash flows between the insurer and the reinsurer happen at the exact same time as the cash flows that happen between the insurer and the underlying policyholders. So when the insurer receives premiums from the policyholders, it passes them straight on to the reinsurer. And also when the insurer pays out claims to the policyholders, the reinsurer reimburses them on the same day for those claims. So that's our facts, and we can see what this looks like on the balance sheet if we flick forward to slide 15. So here we've got from day 1, the day that the reinsurance contract was issued and also contract A was issued, all the way through to the end, different dates across that period. If we first look across at the lines of the overall balances of the reinsurance asset and the insurance liability, which is what we're going to see on the face of the balance sheet, we can see that the amounts shown are symmetrical. For example, if we just look at 1st of January, we can see that the insurance contract liability is 300 and the reinsurance contract asset is 300. Then, if we look down at the breakdowns, which we've also shown, which split those amounts up between the fulfillment cash flows and the CSM, we can see that in those breakdowns, those amounts are actually different. So although they get to the overall same number, the breakdown in the middle is not the same. For example, looking at 1st of January, the fulfillment cash flows of the insurance contracts is 200, and the fulfillment cash flows of the reinsurance contract is 0. And these amounts are different because the measurement of the reinsurance contract asset includes the future cash flows that relate to the underlying insurance contracts that the insurer hasn't issued yet. So, for example, on the 1st of January, the insurance contract liability includes future cash flows only for contract A, because that's the contract it issued today. But the reinsurance asset includes future cash flows that relate to contract A, but also to contract B and C, which are expected to be covered by this reinsurance contract. So I'm just going to continue looking at 1st of January in year one and sort of go through what's included in those numbers to see how we're seeing this. So starting with the insurance contract liability. So 1st of January, the insurance contract liability is 300, made up of our 200 fulfillment cash flows and a CSM of 100. And this relates all to contract A that it issued that day. So we know already that by the end of day one, the insurer had already received the premiums of 300. And that's why what we're seeing here for contract A isn't nil. I had 300 of premium that I was expecting to receive, 200 of claims I'm expecting to pay out, and a 100 unearned profit. And by the end of this day, I've received my 300. So what I'm seeing here is my 200 cash flows of what I'm going to be paying out on contract A and the profit that I'm going to earn on contract A, because it's only day one at the moment. Looking down then next at the reinsurance asset on the exact same day, we have fulfillment cash flows of zero and a CSM of 300. The fulfillment cash flows include the exact same 200 for contract A. So we've got the 200 there for that contract. But then it also includes cash flows to do with contract B and contract C, which we haven't issued yet. For each of contract B and contract C, from what we already saw about our expectations, the insurer is expecting a net cash outflow of 100 for each of those contracts. So we're adding in our expectation that we expect to pay out to the reinsurer premiums of 300 for each of those future contracts, and we're expecting to pull in claims reimbursements of 200 for each of those future contracts. So when I add up all those numbers and the fulfillment cash flows for the reinsurance from contracts A, B, and C, I actually end up with zero on this date. And then we've got our CSM there of 300, which you can probably put two and two together. We said that there is a profit we're expecting of 100 on each contract. I'm passing it all along to the reinsurer, so I'm expecting a net cost on my reinsurance of that full 300. I'm giving him my full profit. One of the stakeholder concerns is that they'll see a grossed up reinsurance asset in this example, because of the idea that the reinsurance asset includes more future cash flows. It's going further, it's got more stuff in it. But in fact, what we're actually seeing here is, because the reinsurance contract, for each of the underlying contracts, it's thinking about cash inflows, cash outflows, and an amount of CSM relating to those future contracts, those amounts essentially sum up to nil until the point that some cash flows happen or service starts to be given. Another thing to note on this slide to do with the stakeholder concerns is, up until the point that we get to the date where all the underlying contracts have actually been written, the CSM on the reinsurance contract is bigger than the CSM on the underlying contracts. One of the concerns that we had from stakeholders is that might mean that the release into profit or loss of the CSM is different as well. However, if we flick across just one slide to the profit and loss, we can see that the net expense from the reinsurance contracts is symmetrical to the total of the insurance revenue minus the insurance expenses on the underlying insurance contracts. And this shows how we allocate coverage units based on current service and comparing that to future service. So essentially what this example shows is that in circumstances that the service the entity receives from the reinsurer is proportionate to the service that that entity is providing to its policyholders, the way we identify and allocate coverage units, which looks at the service this year compared to the service I'm expecting, it will reflect that symmetry. So that was our simple example. We have a slightly less simple example because in real life, of course, fact patterns, they're not all going to look like this. There are different things happen that mean these things don't all happen perfectly at the same time. So particularly, as an example, in the example we just went through, the cash flows between the insurer and the reinsurer happened at the exact same time as the cash flows between the insurer and the policyholder. In real life, that might not be the case. For example, there's some circumstances where the insurer might hold on to the reinsurance premium, so it might collect its premiums up from its policyholders, but not pass them straight to the reinsurer. It might settle them net at the end of the reinsurance contract. So in that circumstance, what we're going to see on the balance sheet essentially is different, because your current rights and obligations of what you need to do in the future are different. They need to pay those premiums to the reinsurer in the future. So we do have one example to show this. If we can flick to slide 21, which shows another balance sheet. Here we have the exact same example as we had before, but this time it's got the scenario I just mentioned. So the insurer settles all the reinsurance cash flows completely at the end. So just the net amount of the premiums and the claims right at the end of the reinsurance contract. And in this example, we can see exactly, if we look at the insurance contract line and we look at the reinsurance line, they're not symmetrical to each other, because the fulfillment cash flows, the future cash flows, are different future cash flows. And actually, in this example, the reinsurance isn't even in an asset position, it's in a liability position, because I'm expecting to pay more to my reinsurer in the future than I'm going to get back from him. And then I guess one of the key things to point out with this example is that affects the balance sheet, the cash flows that are included in the balance sheet. But if you look on that balance sheet at the CSM, and also if you look at the statement of profit or loss, which is on the next page, that timing of cash flows doesn't impact my recognition of my revenue or of my income and expenses from my reinsurance, because they're not impacted by the timing of the cash flows. So those parts of the example look exactly the same as you saw on the previous example. That was all I wanted to cover, actually, in those examples. Hopefully it was helpful. Thank you for listening. And I'd like to ask you if you have any comments or observations ahead of Thursday.
Laura, can I just confirm between slide 15, was it 15, which is the...
15. The balance
on,
sheet.
On 15, it doesn't matter. We talk about slide 15 and slide 21 as being the whole picture in both circumstances.
Yes.
And on 15, it doesn't matter that I'm not showing the cash account, because the cash account is zero. I'm getting in 300, I'm paying out 300,
yeah,
so it's zero.
Exactly.
Whereas if I look at 21, I've got an unbalanced balance sheet, but that's because I'm missing the fact that I received 300 of cash but didn't pay out.
I'm holding on to it.
And so I've got almost a separate line item.
Yeah, exactly. In the first example, the cash flows straight through you, whereas in this example, you're holding on to it on your balance sheet, yeah.
And then the one other thing I wanted to just confirm, so if I look at slide 15, for fulfillment cash flows on 1 January, we've got the amount of zero. It won't necessarily be zero. It just happens to be the way this particular example works out, of the plus 200 and the minus 100 and 100.
Absolutely. It's just pure fluke in this example, actually.
But the most basic thing to remember is that on day one for a profitable insurance contract, because the way the CSM works, the balance on the balance sheet is zero until cash starts to flow.
Yeah,
and that's the basic thing that's being illustrated here.
Yeah, exactly.
And essentially it works both ways. So for a profitable insurance contract, but equally for a reinsurance contract that is expected to cost me money over time.
Yeah. Mary?
Okay. Just a real basic to make sure I understand the concern that people have been raising. And I think I can do it off slide 15. The gross-up concern that you identified at the beginning is somebody saying, okay, if I have purchased a reinsurance contract, and that reinsurance contract is going to cover a policy, an underlying that I will write June 30th and then January 1st of next year, sticking with our January 1st of year one, you know, normal reinsurance contract would have just the cash flows from the reinsurance contract in it, right?
Yeah.
But they're concerned that because the reinsurance cash flows also relate to underlying contracts that haven't been written, in effect, I would be required to gross up my reinsurance contract held cash flows and include future cash flows that I haven't committed to yet relating to the underlying.
Yeah, so you'd be seeing exactly in the asset side on the reinsurance, you'd be seeing those reinsurance side of the cash flows. But when you look down on the liability side, you're not seeing those yet because you haven't issued those contracts.
And what you're showing is no, doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
it's a disconnect because of the way we measure insurance contracts.
Yeah, exactly. Tack?
Thank you. Actually, the concern is on this point because they have to estimate underlying contract even if they haven't issued yet. So only when there is a reinsurance contract in the first place. So my simple question is, what if the underlying insurance contract didn't take place, only reinsurance contract remained? Although they expected that the underlying insurance contract will take place, but it didn't happen. So reinsurance contract, only reinsurance contract remained. So in that case, even in that case, we require gross up and calculate it as if it is ordinary reinsurance contract.
So for proportionate reinsurance, there are recognition requirements that mean that you wouldn't recognize a reinsurance contract until at least one has been issued. But in terms of the measurement, if you're expecting the reinsurance to cover future underlying contracts, and then as time goes on, those contracts, they're not issued, it's the same as with any other estimate that you make with insurance contracts, for example, claims or anything else. You treat it the same way and you update.
Yes, okay. So you treat it as a change in estimates.
Yeah, I do understand that. But the fundamental question is, suppose you are normal non-financial entities and you have risky business and you have you covered your risky business by insurance, so you are a policyholder. IFRS 17 doesn't cover the accounting of policyholder because I don't know what was the reason we may have debated 20 years ago. But anyway, even in such case, we do not account in such a way like reinsurance. The reason why we make accounting treatment like this is because there is an underlying insurance. So somehow, in a sense, reinsurance is very similar to the hedging transaction. So probably, if we could estimate what is the effectiveness of reinsurance and what is the matching of reinsurance, we could provide better accounting. But because of that, we gave up. So then the situation like this, only the reinsurance comes first and the underlying contract comes late. So that gives a little difficult situation to the insurer. So that's an inevitable outcome, and that is what we should live with it. Is my understanding correct?
Can I ask you to hold those thoughts and comments until Thursday? Simply because all we wanted to do today, I think, and looking at the staff and Daryl and Martin, I agree that we really wanted to focus on this, how the balance sheet amounts measured. And I think in the tee up, Laura said that the other issue that's been raised is the complexity of the measurement and the estimation of cash flows. We'll cover that on Thursday. But today we just wanted to focus on these mechanics, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Anybody else with questions on the mechanics? No?
You said this is available on the web. I mean, I know it's attached to the paper, but did we do a webcast of this or did we just post the slides?
It's not as a webcast. No. It's posted as slides with notes underneath that just sort of go through the numbers.
No, because you just said that there seems to be a misunderstanding given some of the comments that people are raising. I think the slides are really good at kind of walking through the numbers. So,
yeah, there's a lot on the website sometimes, I think. There's a lot to get through there.
Have you been active about outreach on this?
Well, we have, but I think sometimes actually when you sort of see that there's a large deck, I mean, Laura's only talked about a few of the slides and brought out the main points. So I think hopefully this will allow people to see the value of the materials that we have out there.
Okay, so with the advertising pitch, I think we'll draw this to a close. Thank you very much.